everybody, and welcome to the Plant Ninja Podcast. Thanks so much for being here with us today. We've got a great episode for you today. Quick introduction. I'm honored to welcome my friend and plant-based ally, Alex Lambert. He's the founder of the Light Leaders Podcast and founder of Fruit Fit Membership and Fitness Coaching, and an awesome example and role model of healthy masculinity on a high-fruit plant-based diet. Welcome, Alex.
Thanks for having me. Hi, everyone.
So today's theme is, can you be a fruit-based alpha? And we're going to get into all the ins and outs of what is an alpha, what's masculinity. But first, Alex, can you just give us a 5 to 10 minute intro of yourself, telling us a little bit about your journey, how you got into veganism, how you kind of transitioned into high raw fruit-based. And in that, I'd love to hear some of your motivations for making the change and like the challenges you had and some of the breakthroughs that you had with your health and well-being on the diet.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. And first, if it looks like I'm on a treadmill, it's because I'm on a treadmill. So I'm from France originally and grew up in with a traditional, let's say, Western diet with like a lot of meat and cheese and bread and also processed food, snacks and all that. And then growing up, going to, you know, business school, for example, I would drink a lot and smoke and party. That was nice. And then when I was 27, I got like a spiritual awakening. I started meditating, had my first experiences with psychedelics. I started yoga, started listening to a lot of podcasts, actually, which inspired me to start my own and going more to the gym and starting to look more at what I'm eating in general for my health. And also I read that book by Yuval Noah Harari called Sapiens, and he's a vegan, and it really resonated the way, basically in the whole book, he looks at the world in kind of a fresh view. A lot of our beliefs, we never question where they come from. And one thing I questioned was, oh, wow, the factory farming, which I think I also watched What the Health at the time. So it really awakened me to what was happening and how wrong it felt to me. So I started transitioning, but quite gently. For a year or two, I would do 80 to 90% vegan. And so I'm 33 now. When I was like 29, 30, I was more on a cooked vegan, lots of tempeh and rice and potatoes and beans, lentils. And 2.5 years ago, I did an iridology reading with a student of Dr. Morse. And yeah, he advised me to go more raw, which I followed, and I started to feel better, more energized and lighter. I lost a bit of weight. I was never like fat, but I lost like maybe 8 to 9 kilos, going from 80 to now more 70, 71. And I really like it. I felt healthier. And along the way, I stopped all the things that I felt weren't serving me, like obviously alcohol and cigarettes and then even coffee and then most of the cooked food. It's true that I think along with this transition, both from the diet and on the spiritual point of view, there is a certain detachment that can come, that comes with its own medicine and is beautiful. But I've wanted to recently get a little bit more. I've never been really disconnected from the body. I always wanted to be healthy, but even more recently, I'm like, okay, I want to be connected spiritually, but at the same time, feel strong, look strong, also inspire other people. And that goes along with is doing more of the coaching as a business also. So it's that whole like be a man who provides, protects, and take that role.
Yeah, amazing, man. So yeah, I think that was a big realization of mine as well, is like we can have all these like very expansive and kind of spiritual experiences and get oriented in that. And then the next step of the spirituality is really the grounding and the bringing of those values into the physical form and the physical expression in our works in our provision, in our families that we develop, etc. And so, yeah, it's amazing. We have a similar path in that. That mine started also with a spiritual awakening.
Yeah, I think for you, I mean, I'm really inspired. I don't have children, but having a partner also really motivated me. And I see that with a lot of young men who have been on a spiritual path. And then when they have a partner, for example, well, then they want to be strong. They want to, you know, be able to carry things for their partners and maybe lift her and make money so they can go, we can go on a trip together and these things. So I think you having on top of it five children, right? It's I guess, a very grounding experience.
Yeah, you could even say like that the develop of masculinity comes out of necessity at some point in the relationship with the opposite sex, that femininity that actually really draws it out of us. And then as we kind of that proceeds towards procreation and children and things, then that need for provision, that need for strength, that need for the guidance and focus of that masculine aspect, it's drawn out even more. So we don't all start as men, obviously, right? We have to grow into it. And even I think in this day and age, even many of us don't even really start to like really realize what that is until our later 20s, oftentimes. But it is a something that's needed in this day and age. And I think that it's important that we really get clear about what those behaviors even are anymore, because it was at one point very clear in the culture what the roles of male were in the family and the community. But in this day of kind of cultural schism, it's gotten a little blurred and distorted in many ways, even in the like overcompensation or like the vanity aspect of things. So I think we'll talk about that a little bit more as we go. So in this context of masculinity, in the context of manhood and being a human, because we could talk about all the masculine traits of this and that, like in the metaphysical, but in the context of really manhood, how do you define masculinity and how do you define alpha?
Yeah, and that will tie into the raw veganism because to me, some of the roles of the man is, well, one of them is presence, like just being present and being here to listen, being here to support. And usually in spiritual communities where men who are better at this, I find. Often the path is we live in a bit of maybe macho society, and then when there's a rejection of that, we become what David Deda would say, call like I think calls it a wimp or something. But then basically like those masculine parts. So two of them, one of them is protect, right? So that's where strength comes in. It just feels good to be able to. Yeah, protect and even carry things, you know, open, I don't know, change the big bottle of water here for your woman, do these kind of things. And the other one is provide. So this one ties more to business, but can go beyond. So these are three traits that we think of in general. And I would say sometimes in society, there is a misunderstanding. It goes a bit towards like, maybe aggressiveness. So that's where there might be a different of also of perception and tying it back to raw vegan. So for example, as men, based on our physical strength, so we're stronger than women and then in general on average. And so that comes with responsibilities. And also as species, we're not thanks to our physical strengths, but thanks to our brain and what we build, we're the strongest, right? Like we can kill other animals and we can enslave them and we do that. But to me, I think I remember a post from Joe Rogan a while ago on Instagram, and he was talking about, oh, we're men, like humans, we're the apex predator, we're top of the food chain. And so it makes sense that we would eat meat. And to me, the alpha male thing to do is Because with the strongest and we can, we're actually going to protect, right? We're actually going to treat really well. We're not going to misuse that. So it's not about being the strongest. It's about honoring that strength, but using it for the things that we think are right, and not bully the weaker, but actually support them and protect them.
Yeah, man. We're on the same page with that. And the thought that came up is this, you know how in the Bible it says that the meek will inherit the earth? In that context, meek really translates more to someone who has a weapon or has the ability to do violence, but chooses to sheathe the weapon. And so masculinity is not necessarily about being harmless. It's about being strong, capable, athletic, all the other qualities you're talking about, but choosing compassion or level-headedness, and to only unsheathe the weapon in moments of protection.
Yeah.
And so this is very, and then when we talk about protection, this can also, you know, overflow into when not to cause violence, right? And so when it comes to diet, that basically, the bottom line of the debate about animal foods or not animal foods or harming animals for nutrition or not is there a nutritive necessity for the animal foods? Not only is there a nutritive necessity, but can we thrive without them? And my experience and my research over after being plant-based for 15 years is that the vast amount of nutritional data and the vast amount of demographic studies show us that there is no nutritive necessity for animal foods, that they played a part as a survival food in times of scarcity, and that not only can we survive without them, but we can actually thrive. We have better health outcomes. We have better longevity. And so I often pose the question to people when we talk about masculinity in the context of diet, that with that assumption that there is no nutritive necessity for animal products in the diet, and we can get all of the nutrition from plant sources without causing overt harm to the weak or the innocent and the defenseless, is it more or less masculine to take that path of veganism? And I think most people under that assumption would see clearly that it is actually a higher masculine path as the protector, to protect the weak and innocent, or the innocent and defenseless, if there's no necessity for the well-being, you know, to consume. So with that in mind, what types of behaviors do you practice and recommend to develop masculinity and to develop muscle and physique?
Yeah. Just a parenthesis before and so that, also coming from a more traditional background of like bros drinking and partying, when I became vegan at the beginning, it was like the association is definitely not masculine, you know, and and I mean, it's just a bit of a silly thing to say, because you can be gay and very masculine, but like it'd be like, oh, this is it's so gay, oh, you want like your rabbit food and all that, you know. So it's just it's just perceived this way. And now, to answer your question, I mean, the most obvious to me is working out.
Yeah.
In physical strength. Yeah, that's that's to me.
Well, you know, I'd like before we go into that, I just kind of thought maybe it'd be a better flow to just describe, like, what are some of the false conceptions around masculinity that we hold today? And like you already mentioned one, which was aggression, like the tendency to think that to be more aggressive is to be more masculine, but actually aggression really represents a lack of control of the emotions and the lack of the ability to sheathe one's sword until the most appropriate time. And I would say that there are also physical traits that are associated with masculinity that are actually quite contrived and not natural, and were not even something we would often see in times of old until this current paradigm of Hollywood and bodybuilding and social media and stuff. So, what kind of, that's really a leading question, but what kind of physical traits do you think are in excess, that lead bros and things to think that like this different lifestyle is somehow not alpha or not masculine?
Yeah, I mean, you're the one you mentioned. So you were referring to overly muscular people, right? Like men who would take steroids, like I don't know, like The Rock or this kind of example. That would be a bit of a distortion. I mean, that comes from actual masculine traits of being strong, but that's
Yeah.
a distorted.
It goes beyond practicality, and it goes beyond a functional need, because there's no one who really needs to be that strong and eat that much food and needs to carry around that much muscle. Even no warrior would ever been like that, because it's very inefficient. It requires constant maintenance. It requires excess protein. And it even leads people to want to get the most bioavailable form of protein, which is often animal foods. And so then I think that that people associate, oh, well, I need to, eating meat is more masculine because it allows me to more easily build muscle and things like that. And that gets into like, the biochemistry and stuff. If you talk to anybody, any of these vegan bodybuilders, they'll show you absolutely can build a comparable physique on plant foods. So if you want to go that route, you can absolutely do it on a plant-based diet. However, the association with that type of physique is definitely meat, whey protein, e eggs, all the rest of it. And
Is
it,
potentially.
yeah. It, but then if we look at what aspects of that actually are not masculine, I would think that it's nearsightedness, because almost always these people have shorter lifespans. They trade the youth and the wellness of today for these huge muscles. They end up with cardiovascular disease. They end up with kidney problems, et cetera, and often have a pretty short lifespan comparatively. And who does that leave? They have to end up leaving their families. They're no longer able to be the provider and things. So it's actually a trade-off, going in the excess of this like sort of vain model of masculinity, but it's actually leads people towards consuming innocent animals. It leads people towards not really thinking about their future and the future generations very deeply, et cetera. So that kind of leads into the question. So what is actually a balanced natural physique, and what kind of workouts do you recommend for that sort of physique?
I mean, to be totally honest, I'm also playing the current image. I'm not like fully out, I think, of some of the paradigm of being that muscular. So if we were to really just be in nature and hunt, and I think my goal is to have a physique that's a little bit more on how it looks like a little bit more fitness magazine than maybe would be the more functional. So in my goals, I definitely have mostly things that are very healthy and towards longevity, also towards being functional and actually strong. But I also have goals towards having a beautiful physique that can attract my partner and that
Absolutely.
can inspire other people to see what's possible also. Yeah, so just to be clear on this, like I still feel like I have that little bit of vanity that wants to show what's possible on that diet, and I think I'm fine with it. I think it's that little bit of ego that I think is well placed.
Yeah, I actually think that's very natural, actually, because I admit to the same. It's like I enjoy looking muscular. I enjoy looking fit and feeling fit. And as is natural, I think it's built in that we want to look physically fit, because that is what attracts the other mate naturally. It's what actually indicates to the opposite sex, oh, these may be genetics that are worthwhile in mixing, creating progeny. So that aspect is very natural. And I think that when it gets out of balance is when the obsession becomes on the physique and overbuilding past functionality. So then to define functionality, I say that that's like being able to efficiently move your body around. So being able to do push-ups and squats and jumping and climbing and being able to lift, do all the natural masculine works that of the that we would have always done, building, farming, digging, cutting, these sorts of things. And then I think spending, because many of us don't actually have that type of stimulating work in our lives in the modern era, it's still very natural and healthy to contribute 2 or so hours per week specifically towards body weight workouts. So that's what I recommend is the body weight workouts. I do 2 hours or less per week. I think if somebody wanted to get even a little bit more built, they could do 3, 4 hours if they really wanted to. And the type of physique that I consider to be very functional, aesthetic, masculine, etc., is what I describe as like a ninja kind of physique. It's very lean, it's not overbuilt. You're able to move the body around very functionally and with strength, set you up for martial arts and these sort of protective practices and things. But it still has longevity, overall joint health, and all that still at the forefront of one's focus.
I'm aligned with that, and so I shared with you why I was aiming also at the aesthetic, but then you in the end you answered, and I really align with you. So to answer your question, it would be that part of functional and also some part of aesthetics, which would be more for me also lift weights. But calisthenics that you do a lot, they're both like super functional, but also will develop beautiful physique. So I think having a mix of gym workouts, like calisthenics is works too, or lifting weights and some like fun stuff, I like to go surfing. I don't want to do an exercise where I feel like, okay, I can't go surfing anymore because I'm like, I don't know, my joints aren't well or not strong enough. So having a bit of a mix of more building the aesthetics plus building the strengths plus having fun and being functional and gardening and doing all these things that are more flowy, dancing or dancing.
Awesome. So let's go ahead and get it out of the way. Protein. What's your understanding about protein? Do you think that we get enough on a plant-based high-fruit diet? Do you think we need to supplement, etc.? And does more protein actually make you more alpha?
Well, in our community, the idea is that when you eat protein, it takes a lot of energy to break it down, and that you actually create protein. Your body synthesizes them with the amino acids and the glucose. So what I focus on, and I'm mainly a student of Doug Graham, there on the 80-10-10 diet, which is so 10% protein, is basically eating decent quantities of fruits. So I have a lot of fruit sugar. And then for amino acids, personally, I like to add seaweed to my diet and marine phytoplankton. To have a bit more concentrated sources of amino acids and really complete profiles. I don't know, when I was doing protein powders, I felt it helped, but that might be psychological. But also I feel some of those things, they help in the short term, but I just don't want to compromise on them. And to me, it doesn't feel healthy. I try to eat things that are natural and that really makes sense to me. So I know it's possible. And also that's why I have role models, including you, including Shane Sterling, including Ted Carr, that don't take protein powders or a lot of protein and look really good. The last thing is, it's not a proof, but it points in the direction. When we're babies, breastfeeding milk is, I think, about 8% protein. And that's when we develop our body so much. So it points in the direction that we're not meant to eat a very high protein diet.
Yeah.
Do you want to add anything?
Sure. I agree with everything you said there, and then I'll just elaborate a little bit. Yeah, like I have the same perspective. Breast milk being 6 to 8% protein, and they develop just fine. Then there's a little bit of research that there's a lot of research on the whole protein thing, but what they show is that with the current recommendation of protein versus an excess of protein with the same amount of weightlifting over a year created about 8% increase in gains for the higher protein intake. And so, you know, that's, if you think about it, if you think you gained 10 kilos of muscle mass over a year, then basically the one who supplemented more protein basically got 0.8 kilos more muscle mass over a year. And then so that in consideration with there's some data that shows us that higher protein actually creates larger metabolic waste products and can cause some other issues. Is it really worth it over the period of a year to get 8% increases when you can get the majority of your amino acids from whole food sources? You don't have to deal with questionable processes and refining these protein powders. And you can still develop, you know, a really amazing physique. So it's always a kind of a give or take. I've always been in the side where I felt very satisfied with my muscle development, my growth on a whole food plant-based diet, and even fully raw. And I'm currently high raw, about 80% raw and high fruit as well. And I also do things like phytoplanktons and sea moss. And then from the rest of those amino acids are coming from the fruit, from the vegetables. And then the cooked foods I do are like, they're seaweeds, cooked vegetables, some potatoes, sweet potatoes. And that's basically it. And what I can say in regards to how much does protein have to really contribute to the development of the muscle, I've been through many cycles of more intense calisthenics programs and less intense due to my busyness and my lifestyle. And what happens is when I'm not in a calisthenics routine, and it's always the same, about 2 hours per week, push-ups, pull-ups, squats. When I'm not in that routine, I level out at about 150 pounds. I don't know exactly how many kilos that is. But whenever I am on this routine, within less than a year, I put on about 15 pounds or over 2 kilos of muscle mass with just incorporating the push-ups, pull-ups, squats 2 hours a week. No change in diet, no change in protein, etc. So what I can say that by that is not only can I maintain at a healthy, balanced weight and muscle growth, because I'm a builder, you know, I'm able to do strength things. But whenever I add in calisthenics work, then I actually build a significant amount of muscle in a short period of time with no change in diet.
Yeah, and you look amazing, man. So congrats. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. So let's see. So what, as far as your diet, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about your diet and then what kind of recommendations you have for building muscle on a plant-based diet. Specifically, I think that you and my niche is both high raw, high fruit. I do recommend people transition from a standard diet through a whole food plant-based diet, keeping it, you know, starting off at around 50% raw and really just making sure they can maintain on a plant-based diet and then working up more and more raw till they find that great balance. Because what they'll notice is that as they do more and more raw, they're going to feel better and better. And I found my balance right now is around that 80%, 70-80% raw. I eat fruit all day, and then I do a little bit of cooked food and vegetables at nighttime. And I'm at a nice balance right now. But yeah, let us know a little bit about your diet and what you would recommend for people who are wanting to aim in that high raw, high fruit direction.
Yeah. So, I mean, I like that you shared about transitioning, and there's different schools. There are one where we transition more soft gently, let's say Professor Spira type of school, and ones where we detox hardcore to set us up like faster, more like Lorraine Lockman kind of school. And actually did a kind of debate with the two of them that was quite interesting. But I like the transition approach. I think that they both work and depends what's people's calling. But yeah, in that way, for sure. Then where so I would adapt it, as you said, to where the person is at. I can share what I'm doing and what I feel works for me. What works for me is 100% vegan. So I haven't done an exception in a while. I don't exclude if you had your happy chicken and I wanted to be curious how my body feels after an egg to, you know, get one. But in general, let's say more or less 100% vegan. Then about 90% raw works for me. And the 10% to me isn't really something I feel I need for my body. It's more social, to be honest.
What did you say? It's most
social.
Social, yeah.
Well, for example, if I go somewhere to a restaurant with my partner and there's a cooked meal, vegan meal that I feel I really want, it's nice, I'll have it. Or last month I was in Germany and her mom cooked us some baked pumpkin and she made an effort to have something I kind of could eat. So I ate it, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And then about 80% fruits, and that includes avocados, tomatoes, cucumbers, like those savory fruits. And I find that I, even though I don't focus on protein, I try to keep it around 10%. So that's partly why I add the seaweed. There's other reasons. And some green juices and some sprouts also in the smoothie and the salad, like mung bean sprouts. A great way to get a bit more protein on raw vegan. And yeah, so usually I'll have like fruits during the day and a big salad, like tomatoes and lettuce and cucumber and avocados with a dressing of nuts and seeds. So I get protein from that too, even though most of them, they're way higher in fat than in protein. And that gets me around 70% carbs, 20% fat, 10% protein, which is a little bit more fatty than the Graham 80-10-10. It's what Shane Sterling does, who's one of my main inspirations also for doing that diet in a way that's masculine, the way that you work out and you develop your strengths. And also something we can talk about, but there's a, in masculinity, there's a whole purpose also part that is important and sometimes overlooked when we go on spiritual journeys.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I'm 100% in alignment with all that. And in fact, whenever I do teach people to track their macros, especially in the beginning, because it's important to, one of the most important things is making sure that the fat to carbohydrate ratio is correct. And I find that 20% range, and this is what the science also shows, that's what creates optimal carbohydrate metabolism through a process of something called insulin sensitivity versus insulin resistance. We won't go deep into science on that, but I recommend people track their macros, especially in the beginning, to get an idea of how many avocado or how much avocado, how much nuts and seeds, etc., the overt fats. And then, you know, I recommend the macros are exactly what you said, which is 65 to 70% carbohydrates, 10 to 15% protein, and 15 to 20% fat. And what happens naturally, if you're keeping the fat at 20% or below, then the carbs, and you're focusing on a plant-based diet, then the carbs and protein naturally balance out, because you're really getting, most people are getting the majority of their energy from one of two places. It's either fat or it's carbs. If you're trying to do 50% fat, 50% carbs, you're going to have issues. If you want to do high fat, you can do it for a while. Eventually the science shows that you're going to have issues. We're really made for high carb diets, being that 65-70%. And what I find is that eating the type of foods that you just described and eating the little bit of sweet potato and things that I add in my diet, naturally I'm falling at that 10% protein the majority of the time. And for those who are kind of new to this, I definitely encourage you, if you're transitioning to a plant-based diet, to get an app like Chronometer or some sort of calorie tracking app. And it doesn't mean that you have to stay in that 20% fat range, but track what you eat and notice the night and day difference that you most people feel when they have excess fat, which a standard American diet is 35%, around 35% calories from fat, versus a lower fat. You should, most people feel night and day difference in their energy levels and their well-being.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, for me, I'm definitely interested in the science and looking at how it works. It's very useful and I go into it, but I don't specialize so much in it, and sometimes I don't go as deep as other people into nutrition, especially because there's like people who study nutrition their whole life and they end up on pretty different conclusions. And so, for example, Marky Mann or Peter Attia, they write books on longevity and they advise a bit of meat. Some people don't. I mean, there's a lot of things in common, but there's also differences. And yeah, there's a lot of people in the carnivore diet who went pretty deep, and you can go in endless debates. So it is useful, but at the same time, I like to get people to feel and to get an embodied experience of what it's like. So yeah, with my clients, I like to get them to track exactly, not necessarily just to say, oh, you should do 70, 20, 10 and track. And if you do it, it's good. If you don't do it, it's bad. It's more about, okay, track it. And actually, if you have some variation, it's great because it's an opportunity to see how you feel and then get the embodied experience of what's right for you rather than just the intellectual. And so I get them to do a little form at the end of each day where they understand a bunch of things they've done and how they feel, some sort of self-assessment on top of the more objective metrics that they track. And that's really helpful. Yeah. So again, it gives that experience and that feeling. Also encourage people to feel, how do you feel after the meal? For me, it's not just, oh, I read the book. It's like when I go on a meal and it's cashew cheese and avocado salad, it's like I feel different. I can feel that maybe nauseous would be a little bit too much, but I can feel I'm not as switched on,
Absolutely. Yeah, same thing. It's like I give people recommendations in the early parts of my program. Like, this is where you're gonna, this is the optimal. I also teach people good, better, best. It's like aim for best, but good and better are great. And even if you have a major indulgence, that's okay too. Everything's a learning experience because we're really paying attention for this time together, what you're putting in your body, going to do some tracking, and you should start to see some pretty clear correlations with what you put in your body and the way you feel for a couple days or even longer afterwards. So, like you said, experience speaks more than any kind of science and all that. And then later on, I teach people, here's the science. I provide the opportunity for people to look at, here's the actual science around why you potentially feel much better and more energetic whenever you've got your macros right. Here's the science on longevity. Here's the da 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 da. And here's even some of the controversial research that, are the common talking points. So my position that I've taken is that there is so much controversy in the nutritional world that I don't want to sit here and be toxic and arrogant and pretend like I know everything. I want to be willing to look at all places, but I also want to build a strong, powerful, well-researched position, informed position, in order to ask powerful questions from, and to be able, to hold my own ground. So yeah, man. So we've talked about in the context of masculinity. We've talked about natural versus sort of contrived versions of masculinity. We talked about the differences between plant-based diets versus animal diets, and is there really a difference in the masculinity here? Of course, and I say to people, you're definitely more likely to become what's it called, depleted on a plant-based diet if you're not paying attention, because you have less concentrated nutrients, you have less concentrated protein, less bioavailable things, but you're also much more likely to suffer from diseases of excess on an animal foods diet. So there's a give and take, and we can probably do both of them in a more balanced and intelligent way. Like the majority of the research shows that a 95% plant-based diet is most associated with longevity. I tell people, if whatever you ethically feel okay about within that 5% is up to you. The biggest thing is making sure the fat and the ratios are appropriate. If you want to incorporate some fish or whatever it is, that's up to you. And then we've talked about like the type of exercise that is good in building a healthy masculine physique, which we both agree is functional, is aesthetic, athletic, strong, and attractive, but not overbuilt. And those sorts of things are a combination of calisthenics and some weightlifting. But really, I only do maybe 2 hours a week. I'm not sure how much you aim for, but somewhere where you're actually finding that balance of putting your focus on your passions, enjoyment, your family connections, etc. And then that kind of leads me to the question of, you know, we have this idea of masculinity in this very sort of competition-based society. And in the type of society that I think you and I both envision, that we're in the transformative process towards, is more of a cooperative-based society. What do you think like an alpha looks like in that society? Because we had those all the qualities that we've talked about, many of those, and you know, even in the direction of toxic masculinity and things, come in the form of aggression, overly competitive, etc. In a competitive, in a co cooperation-based society, what kind of things can we really focus on as alphas? Because there are going to be top males. You know, there's going to be the most fit, the most intelligent, the most competent at whatever we're doing. And that's kind of like what the definition of an alpha is. How does that look to you in the context of a cooperation-based society?
Yeah, that's a really good point. One of the traits of the toxic side of masculinity would be really wanting to dominate, right? It's domination. So it can be with money, it can be with strengths, and can be with different ways. And you know, people who have studied leadership understand that leadership isn't about dominating others and being the best, but it's like good leaders create other leaders, so they support others. And as coaches ourselves, we know that the easiest way to get what we want is to help enough people get what they want. So yeah, in that collaborative model, we need to, like, as a leader, let's say, I'm interested in supporting others to become leaders too. And that's like, and without comparing. So yeah, we don't want to be the big fish in the little pond, you know, which is often a trait of toxic masculinity. So here it's about being our best for sure. And there is a place for healthy competition, I think. On like, let's say, emulate ourselves to be our best and have a group of brothers that yeah, push us and have, again, that maybe little bit of vanity where, I don't know, if I go working out with you and I'm like, okay, I want to show I'm strong too, or maybe like we can have some competition where we try to be the strongest, but in a friendly way, you know, and when we both win in the end. So yeah, I think in our new paradigm, that's what the best leaders are, the people who elevate a lot of other people and will reap the benefits through that. And so that's why I like also to business-wise to do things where incentives are aligned. So I've been in some, and that's controversial because I know network marketing is not like has a lot of shadows too, but in itself, this it's quite smart how it's designed. And you have a lot of that in cryptos also, where you're invested in the people you support financially. So you do well when they do well. And coaching is less direct because usually you don't have a direct financial incentive, but actually indirectly, if your students are doing well, that's how you get new people. So these are like things that feel pretty aligned for me, and where you can be your best and perform well, and your performance is in alignment with the good of the planet, of your all the people you support. So yeah, I'm quite passionate about that too.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. So yeah, I was in alignment with everything you said. And just to elaborate my own words a little bit, I think that that sense of developing like a healthy leadership that is a where you're actually lifting others up with you rather than like pushing yourself above each other through domination. Like I think that that natural leadership that's created from competition with yourself more than anything, and really that striving and that draw to become your best is powerful. And then in the process to lift up your brothers, lift up your community and your family with you is super powerful. And I think that you mentioned at the end there to be thinking of the whole at all times. This is really what a leadership, true leadership, or even like the good kingly archetype is being able to think of what's best for the whole. And so that includes the future as well. So we reflect on the patterns of the past and we implement our refinements in the present in order to hopefully create a better future. And so part of that is to make decisions that are as sustainable as possible, that are as, you know, environmentally restorative as possible, that create as much longevity in our own bodies as possible. And ultimately are contributing to a culture that is life affirming and mutually cooperative. So yeah, you said it, man. We're on the same page as that. And
can I add something to this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Also about like elevating others and avoiding to compare. It actually, so another trait of masculinity is courage. And another one is confidence. And it takes a lot of courage and confidence to actually elevate others and think about that. Because if you compare, that makes you smaller, right? If like you start to do amazing, if I have a tall poppy syndrome, I'll be like, okay, no, that's going to reflect on me and makes me look bad. So yeah, confidence often is like a little bit fake and showing off, but like true confidence comes up from that really deep place of knowing that we're good enough and wanting to support others without feeling less. And yeah, that takes courage.
Yeah, definitely, man. I think it also that comes from the wisdom of knowing that we all actually have a unique expression that is special and important. It's a perfect piece of the puzzle. And so like in that knowing and that self-love that we're actually unique, we're special and we're perfect expression as we are, then we can really embrace and lift up others to become their best expression. We can have that humbleness. We can have that true care. And then also in the courage to be real and authentic with one another and to like truly express our care for one another in our communities and our love for one another's, then we really want what's best for one another. And then that allows for that. And I think that as a foundation allows for that funness, for that play, that competition, and to do that competition in a way that's not degrading others. Like maybe we're joking around and being competitive and silly and stuff, but at the end of the day, because we've developed the confidence and the courage to be real about our emotions, to be real about our care for one another, and to be real about our shared vision, then like that's totally natural and a constructive form of competition.
Yeah, and to give you an example of that, that I think most men will be able to relate to because it's so biological, and that's something we need to understand as spiritual being. We still have that biology that more or less, depending on people, but influence our choices. So biologically, yeah, we want to be an attractive man, right? That's how we're wired. And so so personally, like I have a partner and I try to surround myself with people who are examples. So potentially people who look more muscular than me, who are stronger than me, business-wise, who are more successful than me. And of course, you can imagine if I were to surround myself with people who do less than me, I could feel more safe because then when I go to a dinner or something, well, like all my the men there, they're like they make less money, they I don't know, they're overweight, and so then I feel like okay, I don't have much to risk, you know, like I'm not feeling threatened. Well, it's easy if you elevate others and you surround yourself with people who potentially, if I surround myself with people who, yeah, who are more muscular, that will mirror as me being less. Who are amazing dancers, well, in comparison to them, I'll be a less of a good dancer and all these things. So I think I
It's more
just
about
want people to feel,
inspiration.
yeah, that can relate.
Inspiration.
But it can be dangerous, you know, if you're insecure. That's why I say it's true confidence, is because if you're a little bit insecure and to the dinner where you bring your woman, all the men are like make more money or I'm more muscular than you. Well, of course, if you're not confident, it can feel very threatening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and so then kind of comes down to that. There's a difference between like finding inspiration in others and being like inspired and being like, oh, that's an amazing role model. Like I'm inspired to imbue some of those traits versus like the fear-based stance of, oh, I'm not as good as them. Like, oh, I kind of want to like tear them down in my mind or something like that. Or, you know, if I'm not as good as them, then I'm not going to get a partner or you know, these fear-based thoughts, which is kind of the it's that's kind of our mind's go-to is the fear-based because the reptilian mind is based in survival, so it's always wanting to like figure out what the enemy is and like how to protect itself and stuff. But like the solution-based or the inspiration-based, which is a muscle that we develop, and we also develop that through self-love and confidence, like you say, and we can really derive inspiration rather than you know, fear or competition from that. So, man, we're coming up on an hour now. I just wanted to like the last three questions I have for you are basically are any closing thoughts. So we'll get that. And the next one is the what kind of services you offer and in people wanting to make the plant-based transition. And then where can we find you? So let's just start with any closing words or final thoughts that you want to share with us.
Yes, I would say everyone has the freedom as human being to choose their own experience. So, you know, I respect all choices and none are better. But we live in a certain current collective consciousness and plane of density that has certain yeah, certain consciousness and certain opinions and influences. And as part of it, yeah, men are generally considered as providers and people who are stronger and can support in that way. And so to me, it feels like a higher possibility for myself is to play that game. So I'm passionate about protecting the animals, the environment, being vegan, and I want to inspire other people. And so if you want to inspire other people on that diet, the best way is to look and feel amazing, period. And I'm working with people who, let's say, men and their family keep questioning them on the diet. And if you look good, people won't question you as much. So it's about finding the balance between, like, I'm not saying you should do it for others. It's beautiful to, like, know our truth, but I would encourage people who have a purpose to help people be more healthy and more in harmony with nature and animals to still consider that we live in a specific world where if we take care of our bodies better out of self-love, but also out of wanting to inspire, we will have a better impact.
Absolutely. Yeah, beautiful, man. I'm right there with you. And that's also part of my motivation and my inspiration in being strong and being even public, you know, is being there as an example of what's possible and to show, hey, look, you can have your cake and eat it too. Like you can make a more sustainable, more compassionate choice, and you can still develop a really aesthetic and attractive physique, especially attractive to those who are also on the holistic health path. Yeah, it's just a really great lifestyle altogether. There's a lot of benefits and perks, and I'm, you know, I'm stoked and I'm thankful for you making your life public as well. I encourage people to find you. What kind of services do you offer folks who are inspired about what you're doing, who are inspired about this type of lifestyle, becoming plant-based, high fruit, high raw, and to build muscle and build masculinity, healthy masculinity on that?
Yeah, I offer mainly one-on-one coaching and a community. So one-on-one coaching is tailored to the person, but in general, it's either people who want to transition to more raw and want to sustain a good level of strength and muscle mass, or people who are already more on the raw fruit iron path, but are really skinny and weak, basically, and want to develop their strengths. Then it can also be like people who want to transition to raw fruit iron and also want to shed some excess body fat. But so that would be the three types of people. But basically, the community Fruit Fit is get fit on fruit. So it is about eating a fruit-based diet. Let's say in general, like it can vary, but let's say aspiring to be at 50, 60% plus fruits and maybe 70% plus raw, and wanted to be fit on the diet, not doing it just for spiritual reasons or just for ethical reasons, but also to thrive, absolutely thrive on that diet. So, if people want to learn more, maybe you can drop like the website. It's frt.fit. So, that's the
Yeah,
website.
I'll put all the links in the description for sure. And I'm just gonna say, yeah, just that. Where can we find you real quick? You can just say it out loud real quick, and I'll also put the links in the description.
Yeah, frt.fit. It's like a
Easy.
foot. Yeah.
FRT.FIT. Awesome, man. This has been an awesome conversation, my friend Alex. Thanks so much for coming. Thanks for everybody who's viewing this. Again, if you have inspiration, get in touch with Alex and develop your best self.
Thank you so much, Josh. Can I add one thing?
Yeah,
A second.
absolutely.
Yeah, here in Bali, I've like what you shared with thriving, what we talked about is really not compromising, because I've seen people in Bali, for example, young men do raw for a few months and then go back to meat because they feel they can't get strong. But I can feel in the back of their mind, they kind of know it's like they have to compromise, right? So what I love with what we're doing also is in the end, we don't need to compromise in the way that it's in symbiosis with nature, it's in alignment with our ethics.
Yeah.
And not at the expense of our body and of our health.
Absolutely, man. And I think it's getting clear and redefining in this time where there's confusion and distortion around masculinity. What is masculine? What is natural and holistic? And I feel like, you know, we're discovering, but I think we're on the right track. So once again, man, much love to you, brother. It's been a great episode, and looking forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Josh, and thank you, everyone.
All right, take care, everybody.